I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Thank you once again.
You know, I was looking back over the 9 steps that we've covered as part of your investment formula, and from my limited knowledge, while they are all important, the key step would be number 4, being negotiating. Is this how you see it?
Yeah, it's interesting you should raise that, Ken, because just before Christmas, I arranged an online hookup for about an hour with all of those who had enrolled in the mentor program. That's the 2K club we've spoken about over the past 6 months. And the sole topic we covered was negotiation. And that's because it is so crucial for your ultimate success as a commercial property investor. And the sort of things we covered there were that you need to see negotiation as a three-dimensional process. And the thing is that most people only look at it in a one-dimensional way, which is sad. And all they focus on is the tactics and schemes and techniques that you use at the table itself. Now, they're important, but that makes you, as I said, only one-dimensional. What you need to also do is to, in the process and working up to the negotiation, is to uncover the interests of the other party and devise ways in which you can add value. In other words, make the pie bigger. Most people want to divide the pie up and take the biggest share they can, whereas sometimes you're able to introduce creatively alternatives and options that the other party hasn't even considered, and thereby make the pie bigger so that, yes, you get a bigger share, but so do they. And everyone can walk away in a win-win sequence. And that's probably the second dimension that you need to consider. The third dimension is actually scoping the sequence of how the negotiation is likely to unfold. And this brings you to look at the likely objections, how you can overcome those. Sometimes it's worthwhile raising or introducing the objection obliquely and then resolving it on the way through, so that even if they haven't considered it, it's no point running away from it. You actually address it and then you can move on and it doesn't cause the negotiation to bog down. But that scoping of the sequence is so important, and that's probably, while we talk about the three dimensions, it's at that third dimension that you have to really start your negotiation. And effectively, you are stage managing the whole thing. You have become the director of the negotiation. Now, it's not going to run perfectly, but without a planned sequence of how you would ideally like it to unfold, it's very hard for you to make adjustments along the way to get the negotiation back on track. And so the important thing in summarising all this is to understand that, and I've said this before, I think, that a negotiation is not an event. It's a process. And every process can be distilled down into a system. And once you have a system, you have something you can learn, understand, and master. And really, that's all I've done in the various courses I've got, and the particular one on the Negotiating Masterclass, is to distill it down into 26 components. And this is probably the one dimension level, the 26 tactics that you can learn and master at the table. But the hookup that I did with the mentor group was really taking it from the graduate class to the honors class, where we explored so many more aspects in relation to negotiation, which, as I said, holds the key to your success as a commercial property investor.
So, apart from enrolling in one of your home study courses, what are the crucial elements people should be focusing on?
over some of the past episodes, we've covered things like agendas. And this is where I suggest that you never really focus on one, or allow yourself or the other party to focus on one single aspect of a negotiation. Invariably, if you observe novices and even experienced negotiators, they back themselves into a corner, effectively negotiating only on price. Now, once you have only one component under discussion or under negotiation, someone has to win and someone has to lose. And that never ends up in a very satisfactory result for one or other of the parties. So having your agendas, in other words, the various items that you can have under negotiation, and for a commercial property, you've got your price, the settlement terms, the due diligence period, the amount of the deposit. I mean, there are a number of components that you can have, and by distracting the other party, in effect, by having all these things under negotiation, if one seems to falter, you can then just move to the other and progress that simultaneously. And so you keep making offers and varying each one. Maybe if they don't move on one, you just leave your position the same on that particular one, but then make a progress on another. So once they feel they've made progress on one, well, maybe they're prepared to come back and revisit the other. So having variable and multiple components is what's one of the first things you need to look at. But I think in one of the other episodes, we talked about the three components of a negotiation being power, information, and time. And there are different aspects of power, which I think we covered. And most negotiators don't realize the amount of power that they actually have. And we're not talking about the misuse of power. We're just talking about how to use the elements you have at your disposal to move the other party to a position that you are aiming towards, but at the same time allowing them to walk away from the deal feeling that they have also won out of the process. As far as information is concerned, this is the gathering of information, and much of that can happen before the negotiation even starts. It's amazing what people will share over a casual conversation before you actually get into the formality of a negotiation. Again, that's where I enjoy negotiating with the agent's representative, because they're more likely to share with me information that their client may not be so forthcoming with. It's not that it's confidential information, it's just useful tidbits that you just store away and can bring out or frame your proposals with that knowledge. And so that's important. And as we said, time, because it's a process, what invariably occurs is that you end up with 80% of your concessions being made in the last 20% of the time allocated for the negotiation. And the time frame, the deadline, whether stated or perceived, is often variable. And again, that's something you need to establish in the early part when you're gathering information, so that you can work out the deadline. Now, ideally, you need to have your deadline after their deadline, so that you press them towards their deadline first, and therefore concessions can be obtained and a resolution comes. And as I said, it needs to be one that everyone walks away feeling that they have won something out of the deal. Otherwise, if there's any delay between agreement at around the table and the documentation, quite often if the other party feels aggrieved or hard done by, the deal can fall apart in that time lapse before the formal contract is entered into.
Presumably, simply knowing all that won't make you a top negotiator. Clearly, you would also need to get down into the trenches and start putting it into action.
Yeah, you're right. You do have to get in, and the more you do it, the better you become. There's no question about that. But even the most experienced negotiator, when I say experienced in time involved in negotiation, unless you are implementing the correct strategies and tactics, all you're doing is just more of the same. And so you're actually not progressing as a negotiator. You may, in your own way, have met and overcome some obstacles, but you don't have a proper framework or a blueprint which enables you a helicopter view of a negotiation and the process to actually master it and make sure that you walk away leaving nothing at the table. One of the biggest problems is that it doesn't matter how many techniques and strategies you know, is how to handle it when the negotiation starts to stall. And for a novice negotiator, an impasse, a stalemate, and a deadlock can be very confusing. And in fact, many people, even those that have been doing it for a while, simply think that those three are all the same thing. Now, let's suppose you're partway through negotiating for an office building, which you feel is probably worth only $1.1 million. Now, the selling agent or the vendor tells you that they won't accept anything under $1.2 million. If you're not ready to pay that, there's no point in us taking this any further. Okay, now, an impasse occurs when you encounter absolute disagreement on one issue which shapes to disrupt or derail the negotiation. Now, the response I've just outlined suggests that they are saying, if you can't live with that being the 1.2 million, we've got nothing left to talk about. Now, to the inexperienced negotiator, this is absolutely a deadlock, with no discussion or any progress further is possible. While to the master negotiator, they quickly realise this is nothing more than an impasse, and it's something that can be resolved. And over the years, I've developed 11 or 12 strategies for dealing with these impasses so that you can step around them. And if any of our listeners are interested, by all means, leave your comments below and your details, and I will make sure that you get a copy of those, how to break the impasse. And they're quite simple, but they're very, very effective. Now, if we move to a stalemate, that's where, and it takes place when progress with the negotiation begins to stall, although you're still talking to one another. Now, whenever things get bogged down with a face-to-face negotiation, you need to somehow alter the dynamics. And there's a few ways you can do this. You can make a change within your negotiating team. You could suggest a change of venue. In other words, let's continue this over lunch. It may be necessary to remove someone who's causing a personality clash. And this can be a strategic move, particularly when you've been playing good guy, bad guy. And alternatively, you might try to reach an agreement in principle. And sometimes people lose sight of the bigger picture. And so you can agree in principle to do something. And then if you look at dealing with a deadlock, and the only way to successfully resolve the situation is to bring in a third party as a mediator. And while you may have briefed the mediator, he or she should always open by saying, I haven't had a chance to fully get across all the issues involved. Perhaps you could both start by explaining your positions, and then let's see if there is any middle ground. Now, these opening phrases by the mediator convey an even-handedness, and it shows that there will be no bias towards either side. Now, having first achieved a concession from you, the mediator then seeks a similar concession from the other party on a separate issue. And once you have built up some momentum by these exchanges, you'll usually find that you can end up with a win-win outcome, and it actually happens pretty quickly. So hopefully that gives you an idea of the difference between an impasse, a stalemate, and a deadlock, and some quick ideas of how you might be able to handle them.
So what are the three or four takeaways for our listeners to implement starting immediately?
Okay. I would say the best place to start is by doing your homework thoroughly. And what I'm talking about here is do your homework on the property. Find out everything there is about it. And this goes into the area, the physical property itself, the tenancy details. Put together all the things you need to have at your fingertips throughout the negotiation. And it may be that you put it together in a folder or a file of some sort, even with tabs on it, so that you are not fumbling. So that if something comes up, you can say, well, I'm not sure that's right because the tenancy details or the lease details say such and such. And you can quickly refer to that so that you are on top of the key elements that go, the commercial terms and anything related to it, that go towards progressing your case in the negotiation. The second part of your homework relates to the other party, finding out their interests, their aspirations, what's behind them selling. I'm assuming you're buying here. What's behind them selling the property? Are there time constraints? Do you need to make some concessions on your side to accommodate something that they have moving on their side that is out of the ordinary? And as I said, more often than not, you can gain this information and gauge the extent of their limitations, which we'll come to in a moment, by talking to their representative rather than talking to them directly themselves. So that brings us to the third point, and that is that you need to fully scope both their and your own limitations. In other words, what are the, and this goes to time, to price, to settlement. In other words, what are your acceptable extremities so that you can know, without losing a beat in the negotiation, you can adjust your position to match what you know are their limitations and try and adjust them marginally. But in the whole process of what's going on, it's a matter of working out the best fit for both sides so that you can both walk away feeling comfortable with the deal. And then the fourth item I think you ought to focus on is, what is your perfect outcome? What is your realistic outcome? And what is your rock bottom outcome? Now, I've got to say, if you get your perfect outcome, that is unusual. And there's nothing wrong with striving for it, so long as it is way out of court that you insult the other party when you strive for it. But you need to have establish what I call the negotiation range or the exchange range. And this goes for both parties. You need to work out what their situation is as well, so that when you enter into the negotiation, yes, you want the perfect outcome. You'll live with the realistic, but if push comes to shove, you will accept the rock bottom. Now, anything less than that, you have to be prepared to walk away. As I say to my clients, you need to care, but not that much. If you can't walk away from a deal, if you have to have the deal, you will end up paying too much, either in dollars or other points you have to concede. So you cannot afford to have an emotional attachment to a property. There will always be another one. Arguably, it could well be better, but never get so attached to a property. And so that's why it's important to clearly establish this exchange, that zone, if you like, where you know the upper and the lower limit, absolute upper and lower limits, so that you can very quickly establish whether you're going to reach an agreement with the other party within that zone and push towards providing enough concessions on your part on things on your agenda which are lower down on the list but may well be very valuable to the other party.
It's not until you stop and think about it that you realise just how much negotiating permeates right through our entire lives. And hopefully this session has been a real eye-opener for our listeners, because it certainly has for me. Thanks once again, Chris, for everything that you've shared today.
Ken, it's always a pleasure.